Do you remember the story of Esther? The story of Esther, which is a very interesting story, and it's certainly almost amusing to read about Mordecai and Haman and King Ahasuerus. As far as Haman was concerned, he was very miffed that Mordecai wouldn't go ahead and bow down to him in the street, so he made all his plans to get even with this Jew and all of his kind. But then King Ahasuerus just happened. He couldn't sleep one night, and just happened to be reading in the Chronicles, and just happened to come across a page around Mordecai, and Haman just happened to be in the palace at the time, and he just happened to ask him, well, what should you do for the one that the king delights in? And he therefore thought he was talking about himself, as far as Haman was concerned, and gave him this idea that he would go in front of a horse and proclaim, you know, this is what's done to the one that the king delights in. He says, yes, give it, go, take Mordecai and do that to him. And he went out. You can almost just imagine to see the actual face on Haman's, the actual expression on Haman's face. But you know, when you look at the book of Esther, and you actually search through it, and you will search it from beginning to end, there is no mention whatsoever there at all of the word God. It doesn't exist. There is no mention of the word Lord, either Adonai, or the word Lord in caps, which is the Eternal. It isn't there. Completely missing throughout the entire book. And yet, the entire book, when you look at it, you can see this unseen hand throughout the book. The way things were being manipulated, the way things were being done, the way Ahasuerus just happened to think, just happened not to be able to sleep one night, just happened to pick up a certain chronicle, just happened to do these various things. And here was a Carmel king. I mean, there was nothing about him that was spiritual or righteous or anything else. And yet God was in complete control. God was there all the time. His unseen hand was there. Last week I talked about the oracle of the calendar. And if you just turn over to Acts chapter 7 and just remind yourself of a couple of scriptures I quoted in the sermon last week. But here in Acts chapter 7, it says, talking of Moses, it says, verse 38, this is he that was in the church in the wilderness with the angel that spoke to him in the Mount Sinai, and with our fathers who received the living oracles to give to us. So they received the oracles, they brought them all the way through that time, and they gave them to that time then. They're also delivering them to us now. And we're not reading it here, but the account even in Esther refers to it. To whom our fathers would not obey, notice, but thrust him from them, and then their hearts turned back into Egypt. So even though the living oracles were delivered, and they were there to be taken all the way down to the time when Christ would come, and, as I say, right the way down to our time now, yet the people that actually had them didn't obey. They weren't obedient. And we find that even more over in Romans chapter 3. If you turn over to Romans chapter 3, which I also quoted last week, you find the same thrust within this section, where it says in verse 1 of Romans 3, it says, what advantage then has the Jew, or what profit is there in circumcision? You know, what's the purpose of the Jewish race? What's the purpose of the Israelites and then going to be handed down to Judah? Much in every way, notice, chiefly because unto them were committed the oracles of God. Now, there are three things. There is the seven-day cycle, the seven-day week that we have today, and we've got that. We know that where the Sabbath is, because that's been preserved all the way through. And Christ certainly kept the same Sabbath the Jews were keeping. The Hebrew Scriptures is another area. The Hebrew Scriptures were faithfully copied all the way down, all the way through the centuries and millennia. And the third thing is the calendar. And because, you know, without a calendar, you can't keep the holy days, basically. But it says here in verse 3, for what if some didn't believe? Because some did not believe. They certainly didn't believe the way that Christ believed. I mean, they opposed Christ when he came. But what if some didn't believe? Shall their unbelief nullify the faith of God? Should that unbelief nullify the faith of God? Should God's faith be nullified by them not believing? And he says, God forbid. No, let God be true, but every man a liar. And every man cannot believe, but God will be true, because that's the way he is. That is the way he is. And it's interesting that when you look at, let's take the Hebrew Scriptures as an example. When you look at the Hebrew Scriptures, you go to certain people who do not recognize the unseen hand that is there. I'm thinking of one particular couple of people, which is Westcott and Hort. If you go and look at anything about Westcott and Hort, and if you read anything about their Greek New Testament, and find out what is the criteria. They have a list of various criteria. The one that sticks out from the time that I was actually reading this Greek New Testament that came from Westcott and Hort, the idea that they had, which is higher textual criticism, is that if you get something which is worse in a text and something which is better, you always put the credence on the worst one. You don't put the credence on the best one. Why? Because, well, people tend to improve things. Therefore, that worst one must be the original. That is the logic. But you see, in that entire logical frame of mind, and let's face it, all the modern translations have gone with them. They've gone with their ideas, with a high textual criticism. The problem is that they did not recognize that there is a higher unseen hand which supervised, which controlled, which allowed us to have it. As it said in Acts, it says, but delivered the oracles to us, these living oracles to us. And in the same way today, when we look at the church, you wonder. I mean, we look at the church today and the fragmented way it is. And I wonder whether it's because when you're looking at something like the calendar, here is something which is carnal, which is of the thing you can kind of really get your teeth into, something you numbers and figures and you can kind of write things down and work things out. It's very much a physical thing that you're looking at. And could it be because the carnal mind tends to go towards that thing? Remember, the carnal mind can understand physical things, but it cannot understand spiritual things. And yet, Mr. Armstrong, very, very clearly, the one through whom the truth came, as he mentioned in the World Tomorrow, played today, he said, look, there are certain things that were hidden from the people back in the apostles' time. Things within Daniel that were not to be revealed until the end time. Daniel was said, go your way, Daniel, and reserve, wait until the end time. The apostles also didn't understand them, and they were revealed in this time, along with the very plan of God, the holy days, and all the things that are necessary for us to understand the ways and what God is doing in this world. And is it logical that he wouldn't also at least have led that same man to understand the calendar that those holy days are going to be hung on? What I want to do today is, as you've planned, obviously must have twigged, I want to continue speaking on the calendar. And I want to continue speaking by, I mean, if you want a title for the sermon, it will be The Calendar's Unseen Hand. Because as we get into the details of the calendar, there are things that you'll start noticing that, hang on a minute, this is not just human. I'm not saying that God has put everything that's in the calendar according to his divine way of doing everything. I'm not saying that's the way it is at all. But I'm saying that just as Ahasuerus was guided, he was a carnal individual. So the Jews here have been guided so that what we have been delivered is what we need. What we have been delivered is what we need. Even though there's no mention of the details of the calendar in Scripture, you're not going to find all the details listed. The unseen hand of God is clearly there. The faithfulness of God is clearly within it when we look at it. The areas I've broken it down to for this week, and I hope I'll get through them all. If I don't, then we might have yet another sermon on it, but we will see how it goes. First of all, I want to review last week's points briefly to remind ourselves. So there might be a few rocket ships, actually, on them. Remind ourselves of what we talked about last week. Secondly, I want to go into how the Sabbath and the holy days came first. It wasn't the calendar. It was the Sabbath and holy days that came first, and the plan of God. It was the plan of God that came first. That's what came first. Thirdly, I want to talk about 19-year time cycles. Now, we've all heard about 19-year time cycles, but are they something Mr. Armstrong just dreamed up, or do they actually exist? Fourthly, I want to talk about the Molad of Tishri. Now, it sounds very complicated, and it's not. It's pretty basic. But the Molad of Tishri. And finally, I want to deal with, if I have the time, why we have a Roman calendar today in the so-called Christian world. Because that Roman calendar has come because of a reason. There's reasons behind it. So let's just review briefly last week's points about the oracles. And the point I wanted to really get across in last week was the fact that somebody has got to be in authority. And I talked, if you remember, about the dateline. how you go from Greenwich, and the reason why we've got Greenwich is the Greenwich in London as the zero longitude, is that it was Harrison that came up with the chronometer that allowed us to, like the British, to basically colonize the seas, because they were able to determine longitude. And as they went east to west, they knew where they were. Other people were crashing on rocks and things. And that basically is the reason. Therefore, zero went through Greenwich, which is the Royal Observatory. So, obviously, on the other side of the world, you've got another line, which is 180 degrees west and 180 degrees east of Greenwich. In other words, the opposite, actually on the other side. But there, even there, you have some traditions. You have the way in which when you go to Tonga, you're coming from Australia out. When you go to the Aleutian Islands, you're coming from America out, even though you cross this 180 degrees. And the result is that even when we are keeping the Sabbath, if you were in Tonga, you would keep the Sabbath on the day that the people in the Aleutian Islands would be calling Friday. And when they keep the Sabbath, they will be keeping it on the day that you in Tonga would be calling Sunday. And yet it is done because there's somebody has got to be in authority. Somebody has got to say, look, there's the line. That's the way the line is. And Mr. Armstrong made it very clear. And we do have members now over in Tonga. I mean, I say we, the church generally has had members in Tonga. There's a church in Tonga with ministers and so on. There are people who went fishing over in the Aleutian Islands. So there were people keeping the Sabbath on those two different, it was the same sunset for both of them, but one was a Friday and the other one was Sabbath. And the other one was Sunday and the other one was Sabbath. Same sun, same set, same longitude. And yet, because of the authority that is there, it was right. Christ and God the Father did in fact fellowship with the brethren in both places. I also dealt with how the oracles went to the Jews. And the oracles went to the Jews, really, when we start to understand that, and we understand that somebody has got to be in authority, when we look at something like Genesis 1, verse 1 to 2, where there's chaos, there's tohu and bohu, we know that the result of the reason for that is that somebody's gone against God. In other words, somebody has been listening to Satan. It was Satan that produced the tohu and bohu that you find in the first two verses, or between the first two verses of Genesis. And when we look at the church today, unfortunately, there's only one source that we can see as far as where the chaos is coming from. Because there is an authority. There's an authority from the revelation that we have been given, and that revelation did not come by the might of Mr. Herbert Armstrong doing research. It came because God sent him, because God revealed that to him, and he was willing to listen to what was being revealed to him. I also went into the details of how the sun, moon and time work. And remember, there was your rocket ship. They're going at 900 miles an hour on the equator. And incidentally, the moon on the equator is almost like a goblet. New moon would be almost like a goblet. It's when you come up here to the northern hemisphere that you put your left hand in. And if you go to the southern hemisphere, you put your right hand in. Because you're looking at it from different angles. But if you imagine going as in this rocket ship and 900 miles an hour and the Earth is rotating underneath you so that you're at the same relative position to the sun all the time, keeping it that, you will then see the moon slowly arise. If you do it just before sunset, or just as sunset, after sunset, then you'll see the sun going down, or the sun will be just below the horizon, and then you'll see the moon come as that first crescent. That first crescent is the new moon, and it would then go over the back of you and to the quarter, which would be the first quarter, and then it would go right round the back to the full moon, and then it would go underneath you, underneath the Earth. You wouldn't be able to see that because you're in your rocket ship looking at the rising, you're in the wrong place. You'd have to go round with the Earth to see the rest of the progression of the moon until it finally comes to the other side. But the person on the Earth does see the whole cycle. It starts in the west. You see it one day. It's just a faint crescent. And then the next day you'll see a little bit more. Now, if you're a bit further west, a bit further towards the sun, if you like, if you go a bit further, then obviously the moon's had time to rise a bit more. If you go further east, going backwards away from it, then the moon hasn't had time to rise, so you'll lose it. So people on different places on the Earth see the moon at different times, see the new moon at the different times. And then the next night, the moon will be that little bit more, a little bit brighter when it rises. And then it will go, as the earth tilts, so it just disappears following the sun. And each next night, it'll be a little bit higher in the sky, and it will disappear. And what's actually happening is, when it's daylight, the moon is actually up there now, but we can't see it. It's just that the light of the sun is making it too bright, and we can't see it. So I talked about how the way the moon actually moves and how it's viewed from the earth. The molad is where you have a line from the earth to the sun, and that line is when the moon crosses the line. In other words, it's coming round. If you imagine you're in the rocket ship again, and the moon is, you're stationary in relative to the sun, the earth is rotating underneath you, and the moon you see slowly, ever so slowly, it goes around once a month, it goes all the way around, and ever so slowly it comes through, and if you go a little bit further, you could see the line between the earth and the sun, and it would cross that line. Now, it will always be dark. You can't see it as it crosses that line from wherever it's crossing it, because the sun and the moon are both the same. If it's in the sky during the day, then it's right above you, and it you can't see it. Wherever it is, that crossing of the, when it crosses that line, it crosses at a certain point, and it's very, very precise, and that's called the molad. I talked about the Julian going to the Gregorian calendar in 1582, and how October the 4th in 1582 was a Wednesday, and the following day, the Thursday, was October the 15th. And the reason for that is they had to go ahead and get rid of 10 days. Even the leap year, you know, the Julian calendar as they had it then, was in fact, it got 10 days too much. That had to be get rid of. Now there are actually 13 days that have been removed in that way from the Julian calendar in the Gregorian calendar that we've got today, because the astronomical year is not 365 and a quarter days. It's 365 days, 5 hours, 48 minutes, 46 seconds. That's the astronomical year. So in 125 years, it gets a day out. You've got a day too much in the calendar, and that has to be got rid of. And they do it now by having another rule in the Gregorian calendar. But you see that somebody had to make the rule. And in that case, it was Pope Gregory. Because he was the one that was in charge within the European theatre, making the rules for the calendar. Because his was the Roman calendar. It was the Roman calendar that was being dealt with. And we'll go on and talk a little bit about the Roman calendar. But the key point is faith. And this, I hope, we brought out. The key point is faith, that God remains faithful to his people. And we've got to understand that there is this unseen hand that is guiding the entire process of our conversion, of our understanding, of how, when we keep the holy days, the whole thing is in God's hands. And that faith is really what I want to continue on into today. So, looking at how the Sabbath and the holy days came first, I mean, if Mr. Armstrong was dealing with this subject, or the calendar, how would he begin? I mean, how does he begin any subject? In the beginning, God. I mean, didn't he? Basically, that's how he would begin. And really, you've got to go back to John 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And there were these two individuals. One was God, and one was the Word. And the Word was with God, and so on. And then you go on and you say, well, how did they live? They lived. They existed. They lived. But how did they live? Well, they lived the way of love, the way of outgoing concern, the way that is concern for the other person. And this then became the law. This then became a law. And what did they do? They were creators. That's what they did for a living, if you like. And it then goes on to understand, well, now you come to the greatest creation ever, which is the creation of something that is like them, with the same character that they have. And this is the way Mr. Armstrong would approach almost any subject. So when we're asking the question, well, what about the Sabbath and holy days? What came first, the calendar, you know, chicken or the egg? The calendar or the Sabbath and holy days? What came first? Well, the concept behind the Sabbath and holy days comes first. The plan comes first. If we turn over to Isaiah 45, let's just read over in Isaiah chapter 45. And this is vitally important, because so many times when we're looking at the internet, you go online, you read some of these websites that are going waxing eloquent about the calendar, they don't seem to realize, they think that the calendar is everything, and the kind of holy days are tacked onto it. That's not the way it works at all. It is the holy days that are everything, because that reveals God's plan, and the holy days need a framework to hang on to. The framework then has got to be provided by an authority. That's basically what the way we need to look at it. Here in Isaiah 45, verse 17, "But Israel shall be saved in the eternal with an everlasting salvation. He shall not be ashamed nor confounded, world without end." Notice, what is God's plan? His plan is for Israel. And it is world without end. This is what is all about. The whole thing is going to go on for eternity. And Israel is going to be saved with an everlasting rescue. Something that is everlasting. This is the plan of God. "For thus says the Eternal that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth." And what do we have in the calendar? We have the earth, we have the sun, we have the moon. And here is the one that made it. "He has established it. He created it not in vain," not tohu. The word vain here is the word tohu, that you find tohu and bohu in the verse 2 of Genesis 1. This is the same word where it says in vain. "He did not create it in vain. He formed it to be inhabited." In other words, this earth and the sun and the moon that goes around this earth was formed, was made to be inhabited. There was a plan there first. It wasn't just formed and created, you know, willy-nilly. It wasn't just something that happened. It was just something he kind of woke up one morning and thought, well, it'd be a nice idea to make an earth and a sun and a moon, and, you know, let's see what we can do. That's not quite the way it worked. It was that he had a plan. It was the plan was, ultimately, that there would be world without end, an everlasting salvation for mankind. And it was a case that it was made to be inhabited, it made for people to be on this earth. So what came first? Was it the calendar? Was it the sun, the moon? It was the plan. It was the plan. Now that is predominant. And we've got to make sure that we understand that. And the calendar then, what is the calendar for? The calendar is the framework on which that plan hangs. The calendar is the framework on which the holy days can actually slot into place. Because in the holy days is the plan. And the plan is, as Mr. Armstrong was talking in the World Tomorrow, it's hidden from the world. The world doesn't understand it, deliberately hidden, but revealed to those that God chooses, that God sends, that God is working with, and revealed for a certain purpose. And if we turn over to Matthew chapter 7, in Matthew chapter 7, let's say it's so easy that we can get ourselves so bug-eyed about molads and postponements and all the rest of the bits and pieces involved in the calendar, which are carnal things. And the carnal mind will tend to go down that route. But we've got to get off that. We've got to make sure that you don't put doctrine in that way. As Mr. Armstrong, he says, you don't make doctrine by going into it in itty, little tiny ways. I think he was saying one time in a sermon. That's not how things are done. You will never understand the truth that way. You've got to understand what is the mind of God. Then work from there. And the mind of God is that the earth was to be inhabited. Therefore, there had to be a plan. And the plan then, you then go from the plan to the holy days. But Matthew 7, notice, it says in verse 9, it says, "What man is there of you, whom if his son asks bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? I mean, these are such simple things. We know full well, you don't do that to your child. You love your child. You want the best for the child. Or you might go ahead and spank him occasionally. You might go ahead and say, no, you can't have a fish. You've eaten 10 already, or whatever it might be. But you're doing it for the best good of the child. If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to those that ask him?" And here, if the people have the right attitude and frame of mind, is it logical that God would have gone ahead and revealed his holy days to Mr. Armstrong, and the understanding of what the plan that is in the holy days, and not given a framework to actually hang those holy days on? Absurd. Because it doesn't fit with the way God is. And the way God is, it just simply does not fit at all. It's another thing as well, is that when we'll go on and we'll have a look at some of these things, the average church member does not wake up in the morning and say, oh, I think I'm going to go do something about molads today. I mean, that is not really the thing that goes through the average church member's mind. In fact, I've got a confession to make. I had never worked out the molad, the day the molad falls, until this past week. How, you know, the actual day of the week the molad falls. Until this past week, for 40 years. I'd never touched the things for 40 years since actually doing it in class. And the first one I tried, I got it wrong. And I said, I'm not going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to write myself an Excel spreadsheet. And it's actually up on the website now because I got my sums wrong. And another thing, I went and actually did a calculator, an Excel spreadsheet then to calculate the Julian date or the Gregorian date from the Hebrew. And that is still not quite working properly. By half of them it works. The other half, I'm missing something. There's something still got to go in there. So that's not posted. But here, the average church member does not wake up in the morning thinking, oh, goody, I'm going to do molads. It's just not the way it is. And yet here it says, if you being evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? And so the oracles that were left in the hands of the Jews, as you'll go on and see, you'll be very glad that the Jews are actually looking after this side of things for the church. And this is the way that Mr. Armstrong, the understanding Mr. Armstrong had. And there's no reason whatsoever to change that authority there. Jesus Christ didn't kind of say, oh, we forgot to tell him about the calendar. We forgot to change. And he died. Now what are we going to do? I mean, it didn't work that way. It just did not work that way. When Mr. Armstrong died, what we needed to hold on to was there. The when we kept the holy days was there. There's nothing new that has come up since. The only one piece of new item that has come up since, I'll go into hopefully on the fifth point, and it actually proves the opposite to what so many people are saying today. Even in creation, you find this unseen hand so often. I mean, you open your eyes and you see this creation. Where's God? Have you ever met God? Have you ever had a word with him? I hope you have. I hope you've had a word with him today. But has he actually come along and sat down with you and had a cup of tea with you? I mean, is that something that's happened? But where is? I mean, all you have to do is look, open your eyes and look at this creation that is outside the window here, and you see the evidence. The evidence of the designer, the evidence of this master programmer, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's the way I tend to look at it. And the Sabbath, then, you see this unseen hand in creation, and the Sabbath, therefore, is something that is to recognize this, to recognize that unseen hand. So, what we need to understand when we're looking at the subject of the calendar, and we're looking at the subject of the Sabbath and holy days, that Sabbath and holy days came first because the plan came first. The plan is within those Sabbath and holy days. And they need a framework on which to hang. It is not the other way around. It is not that the calendar comes up here, and then the Sabbath and holy days are almost like an afterthought, and they kind of, we'll have a Sabbath on this day, and we'll have a holy day on this day over here. It didn't work that way. And as we're looking in the actual calendar, and we start actually looking at the calendar, you'll see this unseen hand start to reveal itself, and how the holy days are sacrosanct, are there, and the framework is constructive, it's made ready for the holy days just to slot straight onto. The third point, 19-year time cycles. Now, you can go into the co-worker letters. I've got a selection of them here. There's one from 19th of March, 1981. It talks about, many shall come in my name, saying I'm the Christ. And it says, but the gospel of the kingdom of God was suppressed. And it says, Paul wrote of the suppressing of the gospel of the kingdom about AD 53. That gospel was not preached until 1934. By 1953, a 19-year time cycle, It had gone coast to coast in the United States. In 1953, a century of time cycles from the suppression of the gospel, it went out on the most powerful radio station on earth, Radio Luxembourg, and continues worldwide since. God does things on time. And you think, well, what's this time cycle nonsense? I mean, what's he talking about, time cycles? What's he mean? Another one from 22nd of January, 82. Dear brethren and co-workers, I began proclaiming Christ's gospel of the kingdom of God the first Sunday in 1934. A time cycle later, the first week in 1954, I began proclaiming that gospel to all Europe and over Radio Luxembourg. That was also about a century of time cycles after the Apostle Paul wrote to Galatia about the kingdom of God being suppressed. Another one, 24th of August, 82. Jesus qualified to restore God's government, to set up the kingdom of God, ruling over the earth and administering the government of God. And Jesus Christ's message, and it goes on, it says, then within the United States, beginning 1934 and going worldwide, the year 1953, precisely a century of time cycles after it had been suppressed, and then we have this work restored. And on it goes. I've got several of them here from the co-worker letters. But why? I mean, what is Mr. Armstrong talking about, time cycles? What is this time cycle? Well, let me just say this, that when you're looking at the figure 19, what makes up the figure 19? Well, 12 and 7. 12 and 7 makes 19. You think, oh, okay, is that all there is to it? Well, there's a good deal more to it, a great deal more to it. But 12 and 7 do indeed make 19. And there just so happens, when you look at the calendar that we have and that we use in which the holy days are hung as a framework, there just so happens to be 12 normal years, i.e. years of 12 months, and 7 intercalary years, which is years of 13 months. And these things are not arbitrary. They are real, because you actually tied up with not only the sun, you tied up with the moon as well. The two are working in tandem together. And it just so happens that the only way to get the thing to fit is you've got to go in 19-year lumps as it courses through the heavens. And also, that if you're from the perspective of the earth, if you're having months, you've got 12 normal years, i.e. years of 12 months, and 7 intercalary years of 13 months. Now let's have a look at the solar part. First of all, turn over to Exodus 34. Exodus 34, I'm not sure whether I've quoted this one or not, but Exodus 34, and over in verse 22, notice in verse 21, 6 days shall you work, but the seventh day you will rest, in earing time and in harvest shall you rest. 22. And you shall observe the feast of weeks of the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the feast of ingathering at the year's end. So here in those two verses, you've got one talking about the Sabbath and the necessity to keep the Sabbath right the way through, regardless of what's happening as far as the cycle of work on the land. And the very next verse then talks about how the other, the feast of weeks, is actually the Pentecost, in other words, is actually to be observed at the first fruits of the wheat harvest. So it's a certain time of year that is necessary. And the feast of the ingathering, that's tabernacles, basically, at the year's end. And the word year's end is actually the turn of the year. It's after or during the autumn equinox, when you have the daylight and night and night time as equal portions within the day, when it crosses, when it goes from, if you like, autumn into winter time. So it's that precise time. So there's your solar. So you're going to have a calendar of some description that is tied to the solar year. If you turn over to Leviticus 23, it says in verse 1, it says, the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, say unto them concerning the feast of the Eternal, that you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. Notice, they are to be proclaimed. Again, you've got to have an authority to proclaim them. The authority has got to proclaim when. That's got to come from a central source. 6 days shall work be done. And so you've got the 7-day cycle. And then it says in verse 4, These are the feasts of the Eternal, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. Now the word in their seasons, the word seasons there is moed, M-O-E-D. And you will find, how do you determine these seasons? Psalm 104. Psalm 104. And it's very clear from Psalm 104 when you see what it says here. In verse 19, it says, he appointed the moon for seasons, and the sun knows his going down. It is the moon that is there for these moeds, because this moed is the word there. And the word moed carries with it the sense of assembly, of getting together for feast days. And so the moon then governs, it's the months. It is the proclaiming in their seasons, within their months, within their moeds, within their seasons. And so you're looking at a lunar, you've got both solar, and you're also looking at lunar as well. Now what happens is this. It doesn't matter where you take, you imagine, you're up in space, you're looking down, you've got the sun in the middle, you've got the earth going around the sun, and around the earth goes the moon. And you sit there, and you sit on your asteroid, and you sit on this asteroid looking at this, and you're watching this, and you stay there for 19 years. Doesn't matter where you start. When the 19 year comes to its close, or round about that time, you'll find that the moon, the earth, the rotation of the earth, and the sun come into alignment again. They all align up again. That's the 19-year time cycle. Now, it's not precise. You don't get it on the same day of the week, for instance. And there are certain other parts that need to be... let's have a look, see if we... each 19-year time cycle is actually, when you're looking at the days of the week, 2 days, 16 hours, and 595 parts later than the previous time cycle. And you'll find that on the calendar calculations for Molad Tishri for 2008 or 2007. That's one of the constants there. Now, when I talk about 595 parts, now the Hebrew for part is halakim. I didn't use the word halakim, there's no need. I used the term part. That's all it means. And there are 1,080 halakim, or parts, in an hour. Now, you say, well, that's a funny number. Well, 1,080 is divisible by every number from 1 to 10, except the number 7. Again, whether that's the reason for being chosen, I'm not really sure. But we see here how, when you're looking at the 19-year time cycles, and you're looking at the way in which the sun, the moon, and the earth actually travel in the heavens. They all come into conjunction. They all come aligned up again. With that slight offset, they are lined up every 19 years. Now, what then happens is that you've also got the moon going around the earth, and it goes around the earth in, let's make it simple, let's say 29 and a half days. Now, you can't keep a month of 29 and a half days. I mean, where are you going to draw your line? In 6 o'clock in the morning at one time, and 6 o'clock at night? Or is it going to be midday? Or how are you going to draw it? You don't do it like that. You're going to have to keep the month of 30 days one month, and then 29 days another, and then 30 days another, 29 days another, and in that way, you're going an average of 29 and a half days. Now, if you have then 12 months of 29 and 30 days, or 29 and a half days, you can work it out. You can have a year, then 12 months. If you've got 3 12s are 36. So 6 times 30. 3 sixes are 8. It's 180 anyway. And then 174 for the 29 day months, making a total of 354. So you've got 354 days for the 12 months. You see what I mean by when I say 12 months? When I say months, I mean moons. Actually, the 12 times the moon goes round, and if that you count that as a year, you end up with 354 days. The problem is, the year isn't 354 days, it's 365 days. So you end up with 11 and a quarter days. Now what then happens? So you've got 12 months, and then you end up with 11 and a quarter days off. You're actually short of 11 and a quarter days. You're moving backwards in the year. And then you go another 12 months, and so you go 22 and a half days off. That you've moved backwards in the year. Now you go again, and you got 33, and you're over a month. So what would then happen? So the first month, first year, you go ahead and say, right, we'll just keep 12 months for that one. Second year, 12 months for that one. Third year, no, you can't do that. You have to add an extra month and bring the thing up into its cycle again. Okay? Because they are literal months. These 29 and a half days is the revolution of the moon around the Earth. So you are literally looking at these number of months. You're going into this number of months for a year. If you go for 12, which is just short of the 365 and a quarter, and then another 12, by the time you get to number 3, you've got to stick another month in. And that is exactly what happens. And then you go another one, and you get your remainder, and you add your 11 and a quarter, 11 and a quarter to that, and you go another one, and you add 11 and a quarter to that, and you stick another one in. And so on the third year, the sixth year, the eighth year, the 11th year, 14, 17, and 19, you have, look, seven of them, seven altogether, you've got these intercalary years. This 13 months in the year. The other ones, the normal years, you've got 12 months in the year. So in a 19-year time cycle, what do you have? You have 12 plus 7. And it's not something which is arbitrary. It is something which is there in the actual mathematics itself. You're going to have, if you are going to have a solar lunar calendar, you have got to have it as 12 plus 7. The 12 plus 7 making 19, and it goes round in a cycle. Now, if you get your printout that I had, let's see, what did I actually call it? Years with months for the present 19-year time cycle. So we're looking at the present 19-year time cycle. You can see this. Year 1, 1997, the year is normal. See how the leap years come. It comes on the 3rd, the 6th, the 8th, the 11th, the 14th, 17th, and 19th years. There are your seven leap years. And this is not an arbitrary thing. This is something which is taking place according to the solar year, and according to the rotation of the moon as it goes around the Earth. You're putting the two together. And this, as I say, this unseen hand is there. It's built into the very fabric of the sun, the moon, and the Earth, and the relationship between it all. You're looking at the very fabric of this. It's built in there, and the number 12 and the number 7 comes out loud and clear. Now, the way these, incidentally, when you're looking at this particular page here, year 1, year 2, year 3, I want you to notice that just before Nisan is Adar 2, okay? Now, Adar 2 is actually the same month as Adar. It's got 29 days in it. It's the Adar, and what has happened is Adar that is shoved in before is a 30-day Adar, and that therefore makes your leap. Why on earth they use Adar 2 as they changed Adar to Adar 2, shoved Adar in just before it, and give that as a different month. I mean, don't ask me why they did that. I've no idea. It would be much, much better to call it something totally different, or Adar 1 or something like that. But it basically is shoved in just before Adar 2. Adar becomes Adar 2, and Adar becomes the month that gets shoved in. Remember, you're sitting on your asteroid, you're looking at the sun, moon, and the Earth, and the way the thing's going around. And it doesn't matter when you start. 19 years later, minus the discrepancy of 2 days, 16 hours, 595 parts, 19 years later, it is going to come into exact conjunction. The exact conjunction. And it doesn't matter where it starts. So there's got to be a starting point. How do you know when your 19 years starts, your 19-year time cycle? Because it can be now. We say, right, from now, we'll start. And 19 years down the line, minus this, you know, this taking the other slight discrepancy into account, it'll come into the conjunction again from whatever it happens to be today, right now. So there's got to be a starting point. And the way that the actual calendar is started, and this is... Do not take this as creation, because creation almost certainly, I would say certainly, it doesn't have any bearing on it. But they take it as a benchmark. The start date is Tishri 3761 BC. 3761 BC. And therefore, from 3761 BC, you take 19 years, 19 years, 19 years, 19 years, all the way through, until you finally come to 1997. As the start of a 19-year time cycle. And that's why they're in 19-year time cycle. The 19-year time cycle is an astronomical event. It's an astronomical fact. The way in which you would have months and then you'd have to put in extra into calorie months is an astronomical fact. Now, you could start it in such a way that you would maybe start with a 13-month. Why not start with put a 13-month somewhere else? It doesn't have to be start with a 12-month, 12-month, and then a 13-month. You could whatever you wanted. But it's an astronomical fact. But the actual starting date, the start date that they chose, is this 3761 BC. Now, what about molads? Well, we talked a little bit about molads, about the conjunction, when you've got the Earth and the Sun, and you imagine a line. Get a piece of string, and you've got Earth on a piece of string, and the Sun on a piece of string, and the Sun's whizzing the Earth round and round, and it's on this piece of string. Now, that piece of string that goes between the Sun and the Earth, you've also got the Moon. The Moon is also on a piece of string on the Earth, and the Earth is whizzing the Moon round and round and round on its piece of string. So how it can do that and also how the other piece of string catches the Sun, I'm not quite sure about that, but let's forget that. It's when those two pieces of string cross. That's what you're looking at, the conjunction. That is what you're looking at as far as the molad is concerned, and it is the molad of a particular place, a particular event, and that is the molad of Tishri. Now, if you want to look at, go back to this calendar again. I should have actually labelled this, where it's actually what I call it, the years with months for this present 19-year time cycle. And that 19-year time cycle calendar again. I want you to notice something very, very interesting here. That if you go from Nisan, look at year one. You've got Nisan. I want you to notice always the month before Nisan is 29 days. Then you get Nisan, which is 30 days. Notice where it then goes. 29, 30, 29, 30, 29, 30. And every single time that you go from Nisan to Tishri, or even the month before Nisan to Tishri, you'll do 29, 30 absolutely religiously. That is, you know, it's like a... It's something set in concrete. You can always know that. Now, so basically, if you want to know when was the first of Nisan, you know what Tishri is. It's 177 days before. Every year. Doesn't matter what the year is. Now, why is that important? Because there are your holy days. There's your framework. It's the calendar that gives the framework for the holy days. The holy days come first. The plan of God comes first. The calendar is then just simply made so you can take these holy days and you can slot them onto the framework. But the framework gives this rigidity, this rigid portion between Nisan and Tishri right the way through. It doesn't matter where it is. It's always there. It will always be there. And there's more to it than that. Because not only is the day's fixed as far as that is concerned, but the entire period of time, when you're actually looking at the days themselves, Tishri, or the Molad of Tishri, is crucial. Now, Molad of Tishri is the same, or the first of Tishri is the Day of Trumpets. It's the only feast day that actually occurs on the new moon, on the beginning of the month. The only feast day that occurs on the beginning of the month is the Feast of Trumpets. And that is crucial. Once that is set, once that has been determined, then all the other holy days, both sides, both the ones that go into the rest of Tishri, which is the Atonement, First Day of Tabernacles, and the Last Great Day, and also the ones going all the way back into Nisan, with the one exception which is Pentecost, which floats according to where the Sunday within the Unleavened Bread falls, they all move with Tishri, the first of Tishri. Now, when you think about it, and remember, I mean, did the Jews know any of, what were the Jews thinking when they did that, when they decided that, when this was actually constructed? When you think about the symbolism, what is the symbolism? Right in the middle, and where is Tishri? Right in the middle, the first of Tishri, the Day of Trumpets, you've got three holy days either side. And right in the middle of the whole holy day period is this crucial, crucial Day of Trumpets, which is the return of Christ and the axial period from one age into another age. Totally crucial. I mean, as Mr. Armstrong actually described it, this day commemorates the greatest event, not in this world, but within the universe. Because, you see, the holy days came first. The plan came first. And then you had to have somewhere to hang it on. And trumpets is so crucial in the plan. It is the actual axial period from the time of man, the time of Satan, into the kingdom of God. And there's the return of Christ. Did the Jews know it? No, of course they didn't. No concept of that. They had various scriptures they could have gone back to about the trumpet being blown, but they didn't know the absolute crucial point of the Feast of Trumpets. But the calendar is absolutely rooted onto the Molad of Tishri. The Molad of Tishri then determines the first of Tishri. In fact, no, the calendar is actually rooted on the first of Tishri, on the Day of Trumpets. And that has got to be determined first. And as I say, did the Jews know it? No, they didn't. But there's an unseen hand that did. There's an unseen hand that could quite easily have done it a different way, but didn't. And he allowed the Jews to, just in the same way as King Ahasuerus. He was, he was tired one day, but he couldn't sleep, so he was up and he was reading the Chronicles. And he says, yeah, what shall I do for the man that the king delights in? And it just happened to be old Haman that came in through the door. You see, God is quite able to do whatever he chooses. He is able to look after the Jews. He is able to make sure that the Jews are doing what is necessary for the framework to exist. The oracles have got to be there. The oracle of the calendar has got to be there for what? For the holy days to slot onto. And when you look at what they've done, not only in the way that it is a rigid position, and you can see the 177 days from beginning of Nisan down to beginning of Tishri, but also the way the whole thing revolves around Tishri 1, about the Day of Trumpets, you see this unseen hand very much in evidence. Now, let's have a look at, where are we? Yeah, let's have a look at the calendar calculations. We'll just briefly go through some of these. Now this, as I said, let's take 2008, first of all. 2008, and if you want to turn over to 2008 on your, you've got two pages. One of them is 2008, which gives you the actual year within the 19-year time cycle. The other is the calendar calculation for the Molad of Tishri. after 142 AD, which we'll come on to. The year in question is 2008. The benchmark year of creation is 3761. That's why I said they go back to that benchmark of creation. That's what they do for calendar purposes, and that is all. You add those two together, you get 5769. Because it goes from BC to AD, and there's no year zero. If you were going from 1 BC to 1 AD, that is not 2 years, that's 1 year. Because 1 AD was the year at one time, and 1 BC was the year before, 1 AD was the year following. So you take one off, and therefore you come up with 5768. Now that works out at 303 19-year time cycles, which would give a total of 5757, plus 11 extra years. Now, if you notice on 2008, this is year 12. So the 11 extra years have come in addition to make you arrive at the 1st of Tishri. That would therefore be made up of 4 intercalary years and 7 normal years. Now, 4 intercalary years, because 11 years, you've got 3, 6, 8, and 11. Those are your 4. Okay? But you've got 7 normal years. There are your constants, where you've got each 19-year time cycle and lunar month and benchmark, and then you start doing your actual calculations. Your 303, that's the number of 19-year time cycles, would therefore be, because each 19-year time cycle is 2 days, 12 hours, and 595 parts later than the previous one. So if you like, you're going backwards all the time. So you're going to have to add these together. You've got 606 days, and all I've done is multiplied them to come up with the days, hours, and parts. You put your benchmark at creation, and that wasn't just on any day. This day that is taken is on the second day. So it's a Sunday, it's a Monday. Monday is the day that's taken. The second day is after the light and dark was created. You go on the Monday, but it wasn't just a Monday. It was on 5 hours after sunset, and 204 parts. As I say, it's totally meaningless. It's not the day of creation. It's nothing to do with probably the day of creation. But they've worked it back as this is the benchmark. This is where they start from. This is how they calculate it. This is how it starts flowing forward from this point. You then add on the difference between the lunar month. You've got lunar months there, but you've got 4 lots of 13 lunar months, and you've got 7 lots of 12 lunar months, because you've got 4 intercalary years, and you've got 7 normal years. You add all those up, and you end up with so many parts remaining, so many hours remaining, so many days remaining, and so you get a sunset, weekday 3, at 7 hours and 1,057 parts. That is the precise time of the conjunction. It's the time when the two strings cross. Now, these calculations are not something that somebody's dreamed up recently down in the Astronomers Royal somewhere down at the Greenwich Observatory. These things are thousands and thousands of years old, or several thousand years old. And yet they had the calculation and the ability to do this. And if you notice over in 2008, the Jewish year begins on Tuesday, September the 30th. So it says day 3, so that's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. There's day 3, September the 30th. If we go on to the next one, which was 2007, the year before, last year. Same basic thing, but you're coming up with 3 intercalary years and 7 normal years. Instead of 4 intercalary years and 7 normal years as being added to the 303 years. So it's all exactly the same. And it comes out, you do all your sums, and you come out finally at sunset weekday 4 plus 10 hours and 486 parts. Now, so in other words, that's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's a Wednesday at 10 hours and 468 parts. The two strings crossed. There's your molad. This is for the first. This is the molad of Tishri. This is the conjunction, the molad that starts Tishri. So if you go then to 2007, year 11, notice It says, and year 11 begins on Thursday, September the 13th. So it was day 4. So that's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, oops, Wednesday. And it says it's Thursday. Why? So we're a day out. And this is where you come into postponements. Now, if you go to the back of this sheet, on your the internet, if you go to postponement rules, you can go to the calendar postponement rules. And I'm not going to have time to really read. You have to read them yourself, basically. Let's take a little bit extra time. When the Moel Adetishri occurs at a time of the week that's unaffected by the four postponement rules, then the Feast of Trumpet is the same day as the Moelad. Now, that happened in 2008. That's for this particular Tishri. But when the Moelad of Tishri occurs at noon or later, 18 hours, okay, that's 18 hours from sunset, sunset at 6 o'clock, you draw sunset always at 6 o'clock, 18 hours through, that's noon, the Feast of Trumpets is postponed to the next day. Now, the reason for that, and put in your notes, Genesis 1:14, there's got to be lights in the sky, and therefore you've got to wait. The two strings crossing, it's dark. You can't see it, because he's going in front of the sun. You've got to wait a little bit until the moon rises. Remember, you're in your rocket ship, you're going along, and you've got to wait until the two strings cross, you can't see it. But then, a little bit, about 6 hours, you then are able to see the actual moon itself, and that's where it's coming from. Rule 2, when the Moel of Tishri is postponed, or a postponement occurs on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, the Feast of Trumpets is postponed one day to a Monday, Thursday, or Sabbath, respectively. Now, what did we work this out at? It was a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It was a Wednesday. So it is the second rule that is applied here in 2007. The second rule. They say, why? What's this all about? Well, they'll come up with all kinds of, again, you go into the Mishnah and all the various Jewish areas, and they come up with all kinds of ideas. Many of them are to do with Kabbalah. They've got all kinds of ideas about palm branches and the ceremonies that they've got involved with. But quite frankly, if you look at the way in which it's remember, this calendar was kept secret. The Beth Din did not let the way in which this calendar worked out. It just did not let it out at all. And the idea that what we are told today bears any relation at all to what the reason why the original postponement rule came into being, we cannot say that with any certainty at all. We simply do not know. But I'll tell you one thing, that having that postponement rule, the postponement rule where it's not on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, it means that at harvest time, you do not get two Sabbaths together. That's the reason. You don't get two Sabbaths. You can't get trumpets followed by Sabbath, or Sabbath followed by trumpets, or atonement followed by a Sabbath, or Sabbath followed by atonement, or the first day, or the last great day. You can't do it. With having that rule, you don't get them side by side. Now, you can, if you go back in the year, to the beginning of the year, then you can. But in harvest time, it is a frenetic time. And you don't have that. This then builds this into the calendar. Now, whether that was the reason for it, we don't know. We don't know the reasons. What they say, what the Jews say, is that it stops them having this waving of palm branches as far as the Sunday one. Now, the Wednesday, the Wednesday or the Friday is to do with atonement. Having Sabbath either side of atonement, but the Sunday one, they reckon it's to do with these palm branches. I personally question that. I do. I think it's more likely to be something to do with not having two Sabbaths at harvest time, side by side. So you have a proper preparation in each case. You're able to prepare. You're able to get ready and be able to have that. Rule 3: when the Moel of Tishri in a common year occurs on a Tuesday at or after 3 days, 9 hours, 204 parts, the Feast of Trumpets is postponed to a Wednesday, and by Rule 2, further postponed to a Thursday. Now, you all understand that, didn't you? And in the Moel of Tishri in a common year, before, immediately following an intercalary year, occurs on a Monday after the second day, you wonder how on earth they sat down and worked these things out. But basically, what those two rules, Rule 3 and Rule 4, they allow the year to not If it's a normal year, it will never be under 353 days, and it's never going to be over 355 days. And in an intercalary year, it's never going to be under 383 days or over 385 days. It keeps the years in order. But I want you to notice that what is actually happening here, it's interesting that when you're looking at postponement rules, turn over to Matthew 24. It's interesting that it says in verse 48, "But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming." What is trumpets all about? It's the return of Christ. If that evil servant says in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, or postpones it. And he shall begin to smite his fellow servants, eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he doesn't look for him. Now, it is interesting that that is exactly what people have felt, that Christ has delayed it. It looks like it, but it's being deliberately postponed. You look at what is happening as far as the end time is concerned. It has been deliberately postponed. The time of the judges that we're in now, the time of the shattering, the time of the testing is here, something we did not expect. But God the Father is quite aware. He knows the day and the hour. He knows exactly where it is. And it's interesting that when you look at postponement rules, you just do wonder whether in fact they have a bearing on that particular scripture that is here. Now, I'm not coming up with any new doctrine in that regard. I'm not saying that's definitely the case. But I'm saying that you are looking at the oracle being given into the hands of the Jews, and they have applied these postponement rules, and they do go back. They do go back. Now, where they go back to, you can't say, because it was kept secret. And it was kept secret until about 350 AD, when Hillel II actually allowed it to come out. But I do wonder about the postponements and the way in which, if this unseen hand was there and it was actually guiding things and allowing these things to exist. And I'm not saying... guiding it in a rigid way. I'm saying guiding it in the same way as the book of Esther, where King Ahasuerus was being guided by God to do certain things. Okay, let's see if I can just briefly deal with why the Roman calendar. Turn it over with me to Genesis chapter 8, if you would. Genesis chapter 8. Now, I'm sorry if I've roared through the actual calculations. I could probably spend all the entire sermon on the calculations, but I think quite frankly eyes would simply glaze over. It's much more important that we get the principles that are there and hold on to those principles. In Genesis chapter 8, if you remember that the ground was cursed, remember that it says cursed, you know, in the sweat of your brow shall you eat food. He mentions to Adam, that's Genesis 3:17, if you want to put it down in your notes. It says, because you've listened to the voice of your wife, he says, the ground is cursed as the ground for your sake. In sorrow you'll eat of it all the days of your life. But here in Genesis chapter 8, notice verse 22. It says, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Now it could have been, I mean, why on earth would God put that there? So this is in Genesis chapter 8, verse 22. Why would God go ahead and put that there? Why would he make that statement? If there wasn't a problem, if there wasn't a problem with seed time, harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, there's some problems probably at that time. When you come to a little bit forward in time, I mean, from here, from our garden here in Wales, we can go up in the garden. I can look out to Preseli, the Preseli Hills, and just below Preseli, my daughter Amber actually owns a place, but she's renting a place there. And just at the back of her is a range, is a hill called the Dragon's Back. And the Dragon's Back, you can walk up there, and in the Dragon's Back, you've got a load of stones on the top. They're all these huge stones. And they're the only known place for this particular type of stone. And they took this particular type of stone all the way around, presumably over by sea, to Stonehenge, which is in Wiltshire, isn't it? It's basically near Bristol. So it's 200 miles, something like that. They must have taken it right round by sea, maybe 250 miles, and floated these things around and then erected them. Some of the stones there, now they're not all of this particular type of stone. I'm not sure whether these stones are as big as that. But some of these stones at Stonehenge are 35 tons in weight. They are massive, massive. I mean, imagine moving something 35 tons and erecting something 35 tons. We'd have a job to move it now. The average truck is what, 10, 15? At a Porsche, 20 tons. The average truck. You have to get a low loader to move this thing. And yet these stones, they're meticulously moved round, and they were put in place. And if you go and look at Stonehenge, various sites, you can see that. And if you look at actually what Stonehenge is all about, it is a lunar solar calendar. That's what it is. And the inner stones for the moon are the stones coming out of Dragon's Back. Just, you know, as I looked from my garden across the Preseli Hills, they came from there. They dragged them all the way around. The inner circle came from the Dragon's Back. Came from Preseli. And why? I don't know. I'm not sure why. I don't know what all the details were. Exactly when Stonehenge was built is very difficult to say. But it works even to this day. It's got a 19-year time cycle built into it. There are even certain places, the Celts, which used it, the Druids obviously came from the Celts. And the Celts are English. They're Israelitish tribes. So were the Israelitish tribes coming across before, you know, way before? Were they actually using this place as a tin mine or something like that in Cornwall? Or were certain things going on that we have no idea about? But that was way back. The year that they are thinking of is the year of Abraham, around that time. It could be later. I personally think it's probably a good deal later. It's difficult to actually date it. But there's lunar solar. You find the rise of Babylon, put in your notes Jeremiah 25, 26, where it talks about Shishak actually rising. There seemed to be an axial period at that particular time. And again, we're not sure. When you go back into these prehistoric times, or prehistoric, in these early times, to nail things down is very difficult. But there may have been an axial period. The calendar may have changed at that time. There's Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision and all this kind of research that he has done. It does make you think. However, when you're coming to the actual understanding that we see within our 19-year time cycle, I want to read you something from a website. I won't say who the individual is, but I will say this much, that I do know the individual. I went to college with him. He went through the same classes that we went, he was in the year behind me, but he was in the same class being taught this particular subject as I was, and he's got a very, very different take on it. He said that where does the idea of the 19-year time cycle come from? Around 432 BC, the Athenian astronomer Meton found that 237 lunations are nearly 19 solar years, and therefore this is the time cycle, and the Jewish calendar is clearly based on these Metonic cycles. Okay, that's what they're saying. They're saying the Jewish calendar is based on these from Greece. Around 146 BC, another Greek astronomer named Hipparchus also made some more accurate calculations of the lunar months, and he calculated it at 235 lunations at 6939 days plus 16 hours, 33 minutes, 33.3 seconds, the exact figure which is employed in the calculation of the Jewish calendar. So, what does he say? Basically, the Jews got it from the Greeks. And besides that, they probably got it from the Babylonians as well. He says it's inconceivable that God would have given them a calculation that contains an error of over 2 minutes, because there's an error in this, according to what he was saying. What I want to do is I want to read you something that actually has happened since Mr. Armstrong was alive. And this is being quoted from the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. It's under the section on Astronomy 1. It's under the section within there called Seasons, that's section 5, and it's section 5 of that called the 19-year lunar solar cycle. And I'll just read some of it. It says, "We have lately learned from the discovery of a number of Aramaic papyri at, I think it's pronounced Syene, S-Y-E-N-E, Syene, that there was a colony of Jews there who used a calendar constructed not from observation, but from calculation based upon a very exact lunar solar cycle. Now this was, and it says, the cycle, known to us by the name of its supposed discoverer, Maton, is one of 19 years, which is only 2 hours short of 235 complete months. As this Jewish colony appears to have been founded after Nebuchadnezzar's destruction of Jerusalem by some of the refugees who fled to Egypt with Johanan, the son of Kareba, in Jeremiah 40-44, this acquaintance with the Metonic cycle cannot have been due to Babylonian influence. So it didn't come from Babylon, it came directly from Judah. Nor can it have been due to Egyptians, since the Egyptians didn't use or require any such cycle, their year being a solar one of 365 days. Indeed, no other nation appears to have been aware of it until a generation later, Meton the Athenian won immortal fame by announcing it. So where did he get it from? He got it from the Jews. So where did Hipparchus get his from? He got it from the Jews. It says, the evidence of these Syene papyri render it probable that Meton did not himself discover the cycle, but learned it from Jewish sources. And it's clear from the evidence of these Syene papyri that the Jews there used the 19-year cycle both for fixing the day of the new moon and in order to determine when the 13th month had to be intercalculated. So where did it come from? It was there before Babylon. It was there before Babylon. These people were fleeing from Babylon. They came to Egypt. They found papyri there before Meton came up with the idea, before Hipparchus came up with his ideas. It came from the Jews. It came from the Jews. But you know, you go then into the Quartidecimian controversy, which I briefly mentioned about last time. And this was something that, basically in 66 AD, there was a change proposed by the Beth Din, and there was then a revolt in the summer. Now, 66 AD, you're coming into the time when the temple was destroyed. It's around about the time that Hebrews was written, saying that, no, there's got to be therefore a change in the law. And what was the change in the law? Who was the high priest? Who was the one to whom the tithes were given? And he was saying Christ was the high priest and those who were representing him. But in 66 AD, a change was proposed in the Beth Din. There was a revolt in the summer. 67 AD, Vespasian attacked Galilee. 68 AD, then he went to Jerusalem, but then he was recalled because Nero died and there were various wars. And eventually, you're looking at the 70s AD when the temple was destroyed. But eventually, the 135 AD, Bar Kokhba ended the Jewish nation. I mean, they're basically Aliyah Capitolina, they actually called, renamed Jerusalem. And they scraped the place off, they sewed it with salt, they forbade any Jew to go anywhere near it because of the trouble. The Romans had so much trouble. And there's a controversy between Babylon and also Usha, which is up in the Galilee area, in the same latitude as Jerusalem. And it was finally Usha that won out. But it was settled in 142 AD that there had to be a... just as these intercalary months... remember what we said about the Gregorian year, from the Julian year, they had to go ahead and take 10 days out. Well, exactly the same thing happened with the Jewish year as well, because the Jewish year is not quite... bang on with the solar year, and therefore certain 10 days have got to be removed. And the only way that we can imagine that it was actually removed is that these intercalary years were moved. In other words, instead of being the 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, 19, it became 2, 5, 7, or it was at once 2, 5, 7, 10, 13, 16, 18. And you can imagine that before that it was 1, 4, 6, 9, and so on, if you go back another few thousand years. So, the reason why this is important is because you also had, around that same time, it was the beginning of what was known as the Quartidecimian controversy. And it is why we have a Roman calendar within the Western world today. It is the reason why the so-called Christian world today goes by a Roman calendar, because the controversy was between Polycarp and also the bishop at Rome. The Romans said that we are not going to listen to the Jews, because what had the Jews done? Again, it was all secret. It was still within the Beth Din. They were not going to be made secret by Hillel II for another 200 years. So these secret negotiations, and they came up with this idea that the calendar actually changed significantly, but they weren't going to go ahead and say why. They were the ones to go ahead and dictate what the calendar was supposed to be and when Passover was supposed to be kept. And the Roman bishop said, no, we're not having that, because they'd already slipped away from the Jewish customs. But then Polycarp, who had learned what he'd learned from John, held on to the Passover on the 14th of Nisan. And that's why quarter decimian, because it is quarter being four, dece meaning 10, 14th of Nisan. And so what you're looking at are these things that you see in the true history of the true church, where it talks about us keeping the 14th day. How did they keep the 14th day? I mean, how did anybody keep the holy days? The new moon, I mean, did they have to go down to Palestine to have the new moon visible? Is that what actually happened? Or did they have to go down to Palestine to look at the barley harvest? Because these are the ideas that are coming up on the internet at the moment. Did they go to the nearest new moon to the spring equinox, or after the spring equinox? Again, all these kind of ideas that come through. Is it visible? Is it a conjunction? Is it the molad that they use for the months, or is it something that's visible? Who decides? Well, we've been given an apostle who gave us the truth, and that did not come from that apostle. That did not come from Mr. Herbert Armstrong. It had to be revealed about the meaning of life, the reason for existence, and it came from the holy days. And the holy days then have to have a framework in which they can be hung. And when we look at that framework, and we look at the framework that is being constructed by the Jews, we can see this unseen hand. Now, we have got to make sure that right now, as his people, we have an unseen hand that is, you know, with us, that is actually guiding and directing ourselves, that we are keeping close to God, and to make sure that that first half of the holy days is actually fulfilled properly through us. We need to make sure that we have faith daily, that this is actually happening, that we are in contact with the same being that created all things, who is in the process of the greatest creation ever, and it is actually encapsulated within the holy days. But you know, just in the same way, that same unseen hand also guided the Jews as well. And they administered, he guided them to administer the oracles of God in the oracles of the calendar. And they were administered for one reason, and that is so that God's church today can also keep the holy days.